Wait, do you want to hang
I don't know nothing about that. All I know is that somebody is going to get their ass whooped over this thing.
Okay. Okay, hello, hello. Happy Wednesday. And it's been very eventful. I labeled this show politics, I think, philosophy, and esotericism. So I'll try to cover a topic on each of those. I'll try to do like a little news, a little bit of, I think I put celebrity, Hollywood, that sort of stuff. And I don't like to, you know, be real restricted, but I also like to have some. Let me find a starting point. Okay, so I was watching the drone footage of the Little St. James must-see 4K Ultra HD drone footage captures amazing close-up views of Jeffrey Epstein's mysterious private island. On Friday, YouTube account Rusty Shackelford. Rusty Shackelford, not the account, but the name. Was the guy from King of the Hill who was the conspiracy theorist. And these shots are very, very well done. And they seem to have gotten up very close. And they kind of, I don't know, it looks kind of suspicious to me. I think that this story, if I understand it correctly, I'll read a little bit more of this article, and then I'll give my take on what happened. It says, these are three other much shorter videos of the island on channel Link 1, 2, and 3. The island is officially named Little St. James, but sources claim Epstein himself dubbed it Little St. Jeff's because he's Jeffrey. This is where Epstein, convicted of sex crimes a decade ago in Florida and now charged in New York with trafficking girls as young as 14, repaired his escape from the toil of cultivating the rich and powerful. Over the years, the 66-year-old crossed paths with former and future presidents, as well as a who's who of wealthy business figures and celebrities. On St. Thomas, he has been a subject of lurid speculation for as long as anyone can remember. Tourists still take boats out to get a glimpse of the island where, according to a former employee, Epstein hosted young women who flew in to St. Thomas with him and were ferried over in groups aboard a 38-foot vessel called the Lady Ghislaine, apparently named for his friend Ghislaine Maxwell, the Mossad operator. It's part of the tour and has been forever, said Christy Query, owner of the Virgin Islands Yacht Charter in Compass Point Marina on St. Thomas, the gateway isle of the Virgin Islands. And then it has a very up-close picture video of one of the buildings, and it has a blue stripes and a wooden door that's very reminiscent of like a temple or something. So the question is, if everyone knew that that was going on for that long, you know, why did they not say anything about it? And why was the guy allowed to operate, you know, with such impunity? And, you know, why did he get such a sweetheart deal? Which a lot of people, I think, have discussed ad nauseum, but it's so close to home here that basically, you know, all this stuff is actually very eerily close to home here. And everything seems to happen in either this county or the county over, and I don't like it. It's very odd. And yeah, the guy got a sweetheart deal where you get to get out of going to jail for a week, and then you just check in on the weekend. And they said, well, that was because there wasn't, Alan Dershowitz said, that was because there was not sufficient evidence, or, you know, there wasn't that much to convict the guy on. But then more stuff came out and was covered that said that there were people like Stephen Hawking and other scientists and things going over to the island, and they were talking. It wasn't just like a, you know, underage compromised politicians and celebrities type of a deal. It was actually they were discussing genetic, like engineering. And the reason why they said they wanted younger women was because for those kind of purposes, they wanted to do some experiments, which sounds kind of crazy. To me, it looked like a combination of Bohemian Grove with the ritual side, then the political intrigue with the politicians, Bill Clinton, and who else was supposed to be on that? The celebrities, Chris Tucker was named on one of them. They had the manifest. It had Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, I think, was on there, Donald Trump, and, you know, all the big names that are around right now, all the way up to the president. And what happened was that it wasn't, like I said, just they talked about massages and that sort of stuff, but it seems like they're putting that stuff out front because it was actually even crazier. Now, they set up, they built those temples, and then there's a big sundial. And, you know, it reminds me of, you know, when you go into a place like, you know, whether it's a Catholic church or a Kabbalah center, you'll find books on, not in a Catholic church, but, you know, in the Kabbalah center, they had a bunch of books on astrology and sex magic. And I think basically that was the temple aspect to the whole thing. So you had the theatrical part, which was similar to Bohemian Grove. You had the political intrigue, which ensnared a lot of people. It coincided with the election and the WikiLeaks stuff talked about it. And then I think about it reached the critical mass when people kept circulating it, talking about it. And there was an uproar because no one did anything. So I think they decided to kill two birds with one stone and talk about it without going into the in-depth stuff. So they put some of this stuff out front and said, well, look, there were thousands of girls and he had pictures everywhere and, you know, this, that, and the other, you know, as a smokescreen for some of the real crazy stuff that was going on there. But, you know, who would really know unless, you know, they went there. But the drone footage is very, very strange because why now? Why is there all this evidence now? It reminds me of, I was watching for a break this week. I watched the Avengers movie. I watched some of the Lessons from the Screenplay YouTube channel, which is actually pretty good. The kid on there, I don't know if he's a screenwriter or what, but he explained some of the artifice of how to write and, you know, just the basics of screenwriting. And I noticed that a lot of these channels that do those things, they usually are pretty immune to the censorship stuff on YouTube. They don't get popped, at least I don't think they don't complain that they do, of copyright stuff or censorship stuff. They kind of walk in between the raindrops. But I noticed the reason seems to be that they all, whether it's that channel or Now You See It or another one that are pretty much the same. I think the other one is Every Frame a Painting, but I don't know if he's in that little network. They seem to all have the same advertisers, the same sponsors. It started out as like Audible, so you could get a book. Then they have like Skillshare and, you know, these other ones. I should be getting a kickback for promoting them. But, you know, they all kind of switched advertisers at the same time. and they work them into their scripts, which I would say they do YouTube on a level that it should be done on, where it should be like a little mini movie. It should be well edited. It should be, if you have the time and the resources and you have that background where you went to maybe a film school or an art school, they teach you just the basics on how to do that. And it's actually pretty well done. And for the guy, and the guy has over a million subs on a little channel like that, you know, for somebody to have that many subs, that's a lot. And he did a 1 million subscriber video on a movie that I was talking about that was really good that pertains to this. He did for his millionth subscriber video, he did a video on adaptation. And the thing that's funny about that movie is it's about a guy that has the worst case of writer's block in history. And it has, the movie is filmed almost backwards. So they talk about what they're going to make the movie about. And then when you, after you see the whole thing, you go back and you watch it again. So it has a rewatch value, because as the movie progresses, it's a movie about making the movie, about writing the script and having a hard time writing the movie that you're going to watch. So it sounds more complicated than it is, but it's actually pretty cleverly crafted and devised. So for the 1 million subscriber, this kid did a take on that where there's two twin brothers, which is a very common theme. And one of them is, you know, one side of the business of selling out and, you know, making the thriller and all of the tropes and the common Hollywood isms, like the action, drugs, and sex. He goes, I didn't want to put those in this movie. And then he ends up doing that at the end by having a character, his brother, who externalizes the conflict through dialogue with him. So he creates this fictional brother who, at the end of the movie, they keep the gag running and say that he's a real guy, and really it's just Nicolas Cage, you know, acting off of himself. But he's playing two halves of the same brain, and it's basically just him arguing with himself. But it's done in a funny way, and it's done in a creative way. I think it's worth watching. And it has a lot of cool stuff. And I think it was the first movie to use the hyper-realism where they do car crashes. And there's this one scene where, if you've ever been in a car accident, as severe as this one, it's pretty dead on. Especially down here in Florida, because it's where it takes place. I think we have the worst drivers. They did a survey where we have the worst drivers in the country, and I think it's in the Miami area. And I would say that's probably true. Well, anyway, what happened, Miami's kind of a small city. It's kind of weird the way it's set up. So if you ever have to navigate from there, it's hellish. But there's a scene in there, and I remember this probably being the first movie where there's two or three scenes of car accidents. And what happens is it was that MTV director that made it, Spike Jonze. And there's a scene where everything's fine. And the guy has, he's backing out of his driveway. And there's like a hedgerow. So you can't, like, you know, you got a blind spot. And they say his uncle and somebody's in the back seat. And he says, how's everything going, John? And he says, oh, great, Uncle Jim. Everything's been a dream this last year. And as he's backing out, they cut to the back seat. And it happened so fast, this car zooms up. I don't know how they filmed it. And it slams the side of the car, T-bones the car. And of course, they're instantly killed because the guy was probably going like 50 miles an hour. And it really looks like it and feels like that disoriented feeling you get when you're in a wreck like that and it happens so fast, especially, like I said, down here in Florida. And basically, there's another shot in the movie where he does the same thing, but this is in the surreal part. And the two brothers are driving. They're trying to escape they're not in Loxahatchee. They're in the swamp out in might be Miccosukee Indian Territory. And they're trying to escape the bad guys, let's say. And all of a sudden, the one brother doesn't have a seatbelt on, and he slams on the brakes, and he goes flying through the windshield, which the way the glass breaks, it wouldn't happen with the safety glass, but the way that it looks and the suddenness of it is so, it's so realistic, even though it's in the hyper-realistic part of the movie, that I think that style of how the guy filmed it was sort of coined, because then I saw it copied later on in other movies. It looks like somebody would if they went flying through a window. In fact, it was pre-YouTube, so it was before when you see some of the comments for these things. Just, they make me laugh. There's a video called How Not to Drive Your Car, and you know, the video is not funny because the people are getting in car accidents, but it can be a little bit absurd about how bad of drivers they are. So it's a bunch of cars with dash cams, basically, and it's filmed somewhere in Russia. And if you scroll down to the comments, which is usually the best part of these, of a lot of these videos, is that when it's not a troll or a bot, people have really funny senses of humor. And they would say things like, I guess in Russia, a red light means accelerate, a yellow light means stop, and, you know, whatever the rules inverted are. And you see people flying through, you know, the glass and stuff like that, and just ridiculous crashes. There's one where a girl is dancing for no reason. She just starts to dance really fast on the side of the road. She set up a camera and did this. And as she's dancing, a motorcycle is heading, it's a two-lane road in front of her house. Now, clearly, it would have been distracting to do that if she had thought ahead of it. So she sets up the camera and she starts, like, gyrating really, really fast. Just a weird dance, you know, nothing, just a weird dance on the side of a two-lane road where the house, her, probably her house was. And you can see, if you slow it down, the guy on the motorcycle is coming one way and the guy in the car is coming the other. And they probably both just, you know, looked up for a second because they were probably like, what the hell is that on the side of the road? And bam, they hit each other head on and the guy on the motorcycle goes flying over the car. And then the girl keeps dancing, stops for a second, and then makes like a face like, oops. And then goes and walks slowly over the camera and shuts it up. So this looked like that. So whoever the guy was that, Spike Jonze, but, you know, whoever it was that set up that special effect, he did a good job because thanks to YouTube, you can actually see those kinds of things happen for real. And if that actually was real, and that was, it was pretty close to what it looked like. Okay, I'm going to talk about this movie that came out. Maybe I'll talk about the Avengers first, because I don't know too much. I was discussing this with Bill from OCS 101 earlier. We were talking about Luke Perry and how there was going to be a new 90210 movie and how he passed away and how did he film the movie if he had just died. He had a heart attack, it looks like, and then he had a follow-up, and then they took him off life support. But I have to look more into it because I don't know exactly. But he was in this new movie that Quentin Tarantino made. I'm not a big fan of Quentin Tarantino. Quentin Tarantino, I have sort of the same complaints about him that Sean Astin had about him, that he kind of goes for the low-hanging fruit and, you know, he does the exploitation thing. And the people that think that Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction are so smart, he had a co-writer on Pulp Fiction. And on Reservoir Dogs, that movie is a copy of, I think it's an Asian heist movie that's just like wholesale ripped off, and all they do is just change the names. And it's the same movie. It's just with a different name. And then somebody said, if you ever listen to the dialogue with his characters, they all sound just like him. So whether it's a girl, you know, whether it's a guy talking, you can picture those words flying out of his mouth. And he has sort of this frenetic style, almost in the way that Woody Allen has a very identifiable voice and style of the way that he talks. Once you hear it and you then hear his characters talk, you can sort of hear him talking through them. It's sort of the same thing with Quentin Tarantino. So I kind of dropped out of watching his movies after, I saw parts of the Nazi one. And then I saw parts of the last one that it copied The Thing. And I can't believe Kurt Russell signed on for that because The Thing was so good. And he said he even used the music from The Thing, which was just a way, way better, farly superior movie about paranoia and all that stuff. And then just the way it's crafted, like a puzzle. And if you go back, you can sort of piece it together. And then the very end scene, which is just so perfect, where the two of them are dying in the snow, and you don't know which one. I mean, you have an idea that Kurt Russell's the uninfected guy, and Childs is infected, and the two of them are going to just sort of have this final game of chess. It bookends the beginning with the end, where he's having a chess game with the computer and he loses. And then at the end, he's going to have one last chess game and see if this creature is, you know, going to freeze in the snow or if he's going to blast him with the blowtorch. And then it just sort of leaves you hanging. So Quentin Tarantino, who rips everything off, he used that for his last movie. And then with this one, the reason why there was criticism of it was Bruce Lee's daughter. They put a character in there that was supposed to be Bruce Lee, but because Bruce Lee wasn't really as recognizable, because he's, it would kind of be like if you put Elvis in a movie, but it was 70s version of Elvis, and you set him in the 60s, he would be like wearing his cape and stuff. And you'd be like, well, what the hell is Elvis wearing his cape for in the 60s? He wasn't in that phase yet. Well, that's what they did with Bruce Lee in this movie. It's called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And what they did was, because I guess they didn't know the audience would recognize Bruce Lee, they gave him a 70s style haircut and glasses and gloves. And he was really supposed to be on the lot filming The Green Hornet at that time. So he would not have looked like that. So what they did was they caricatured him, but they caricatured him as he was dressed later on in life. And they had him fight Brad Pitt. And everyone said that wasn't his fighting style. And, you know, some stunt guy would not be able to kick Bruce Lee's ass, especially not Brad Pitt, and blah, 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 blah. So his daughter has a podcast, and she was like, no, that would not happen. Not like that. And it was kind of insulting. And why was he dressed like that? Why was his hair cut like he was in the 70s? There's a lot of crossover from the Manson thing. The reason why he made that movie, he even pissed off the parents of Sharon Tate. That one case had so many different angles to it, from the Vincent Bugliosi. You know, I read this book about 100 times, and I'm going to make sure I'm pronouncing his name right. He had an angle. Bear with me. Everybody had an angle in that case, and the Beatles were tied into it. The Beach Boys were tied into it. Laurel Canyon was tied into it. Dave McGowan's book on Laurel Canyon. Hold on, guys. I have to just adjust this. We're having a storm here. The lights keep going out. Okay. Everything sort of spun off of that. And that's what this movie was sort of talking about. It was talking about how they were mad that the character, the woman Margot Robbie that played Sharon Tate in the movie, that she didn't have enough lines. And they were saying that, well, her character was really just a metaphor for the times, and how the two guys in it, Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt, were based on a real couple of guys, that one was an actor and one was a stuntman, and they had sort of a tragic story. I don't know who the real guys that they were based on. They were talking about who it was really based on. But what happens is that it's about a guy who turns into a has-been, basically, after his era is up. And then the new era of cinema came in, and it was ushered in through this time period where the Manson murders took place. Well, there were so many things that took place around that same time also. There was Playboy magazine. There was the Church of Satan. There was the Year of the Witch in Time magazine. There was, all this occult stuff. There was those high-profile murders. There was the Zodiac stuff kicking off. You had a paradigm shift that was taking place, and they were also pushing this because the CIA in the 50s, after World War II, said the new war after World War III is going to be cultural. And if they lie, so we have to lie. And if we don't have plausible deniability, if we don't, if we don't sort of run the culture stuff, then they will, and we kind of have to do disinfo. This war is going to have to be fought on a cultural landscape, and it's going to be a war, like John says, for the mind, and that's why he says that, because he was sort of let in on this stuff. Well, he absolutely was let in on this stuff, and he'll say that he was. That's not me just making that up. That's him talking. In fact, he said it on a number of occasions. So basically what happened was that they funded magazines without the people even knowing, because the people were saying things that they wanted them to be saying. So you didn't even have to be. You didn't have to be. I lost my place. Basically, what happened was that they were running a huge disinfo thing. They took over everything from art to movies to books. You know, they had to, and the justification was that they planted news stories. And when some of the Congress people got freaked out and said, "Oh my God, is this true?" they calmed them down by saying, "No, that was an article that we, you know, that we put out there." So they actually admitted, like, "No, it's us. Just, you know, this is not true at all." So does that sound familiar? Does that sound anything like what's been going on in the last 20 or 30 years? Does that sound anything like any of these recent events that have been going on in the news, like these mass shootings and things? Why do these people always have manifestos? I don't think they had manifestos before. I think the last guy in the 90s, when they were doing this sort of stuff, they had Eric Rudolph, the bomber. They had, I think he might have had a manifesto. I'm trying to go back in my mind to think back who had manifestos. Now, why are these guys writing out these manifestos? Why are they, why do they have these agendas? But I think this last guy, they captured him alive, so they'll be able to find out. And they'll be able to ask him. But, you know, just like that guy that shot up the movie theater in Illinois, we've never heard from him again. At least I have not seen anything about that. It's like they serve a purpose, and then they get fluffed aside, and they move on to the next thing. Of course, the news cycle's so fast that, you know, everything sort of gets pushed aside, that they have to kind of keep having these events happen. I'm not saying that the events aren't real, and I'm not saying that I'm trying to scroll through the news to see if I can even find it right now. I'm not saying that the news is not real, or, I mean, that these things aren't real, that they're not doing them, but it seems like they're amped up and they're ramped up, and that there's a news cycle that moves with the weekends, almost, you know, they'll dump bad news on a Friday so that it has the whole weekend to, you know, for people to ignore it, for it to get talked about and talked about and talked about and discussed on the different shows. And then by Monday, they can get past it. So if there's a scandal of some kind that they want to put out there, that's when they'll release it. And, this is an interesting article. It says anti-Semitism and the orthodoxy in the age of Trump. Now, why do you think they're always trying to link Trump with anti-Semitism when his daughter is supposedly is married to Jared Kushner, who's Jewish, and she is converted? How would that apply? I'm just trying to read through this. So what do you do in a time like that? When you know that stuff is happening, and you know that, you know, your art is also another way to wash money. So are casinos and strip clubs and, you know, other sort of places. Anything that's a cash, big cash type of a business. A lot of people who had, in fact, they didn't even have to be there was a place down the street. I don't want to out the guy because I still eat there. But they were taking only cash for years. It was an Italian restaurant. That's nonspecific enough. And what in fact, this happened in two separate ones. And they were doing so well that they opened a chain, and each sibling got a chain and opened it and ran them. And they did really well. And then, but they would never take credit cards. They would take cash and checks, and you can't do that. And eventually, what happened was that the guy got taken down by the IRS on a tax evasion. He was driving a Ferrari, which is so low key, and they popped him. But the restaurant is still going strong, and you know, it's still good. But you know, some people, I guess, are just kind of flagrant, and I don't know who his accountant was, but I'm trying to find. I had this thing queued up with some books that I said I was going to list last week. And every single time, it's not even funny, every single time I try to reference them, it does this. Well, in the meantime, I'll tell you also, I noticed that Bernie Sanders was on. Joe Rogan finally had Bernie Sanders on. Now, who would have seen that coming? And the reason why, I think, is because someone told me that there's an election happening. At least that's a rumor I heard. I don't know. But I think I found it. I did not. I'll keep looking, though. So he had Bernie Sanders on, and they discussed things like free education. Or no. Student debt. And the problem with the student debt is, of course, that everything else you can declare bankruptcy on. And the one thing that they say, well, this was the problem that they, as they stated it, I didn't take out a loan to go to school. They had a prepaid plan, and we used that. And I think if you want to send your kids to school, or they want to have that option to go, because I think you can actually cash it in. If they don't, you can do that where you put a little bit of money aside ahead of time. And that might be a better idea then, because a few of my friends got ensnared in this whole thing where the old school wisdom, or the old idea was that you worked hard in high school, you tried to get good grades, and then you went to the college, you studied for whatever the degree was that you wanted to go and later work in, and then you got the job in that field, or maybe in a field that was similar, and then you saved up the money, and you retired at a certain age, and that worked for the previous generation. But that's not what happened to the subsequent generation, and they kind of got screwed, because what he was saying was, and I don't think he's wrong on it, but his solution was kind of odd. What happened was, he said that, because this is how he appealed to that large base of Occupy Wall Street age kids, the Bernie bro kids. What he did was that he said his high school was free. You know, his school was free. And you know, it's not really free. You pay your property tax goes to the local schools and stuff. So it's not free, but anyway, he said he got a good education. So he said, why shouldn't it be the same thing with the colleges? He said the problem with the colleges were the kids were 18, and Joe Rogan goes, yeah, their brains aren't even fully developed yet, which is true. I think it's 24 to 26 for men before their brains fully mature. And he said that a lot of them would sign on to these high interest loans, and they wouldn't know that the whole ramifications were, you know, that they were for life. You know, some of these schools are super expensive, and they could not default, or they couldn't do anything about it. Once they took out these loans, they were basically saddled with it. And I was reading on the, I think it was on a show where Bill was on the show, I was reading in the different generations and what their spending habits were and what their ideas on money were, like Generation X versus the baby boomers and so on and so forth. And what happened was that and the millennials, because it's kind of like those three that are that are sort of the movers and the shakers right now. And what happened was that they all have different spending habits. They all have different philosophies of how they look at things. They said some you can't market to. Some are very brand loyal. And some are, let me see, maybe I can find the age ranges here. This was very interesting because they put these things together so that people understand how to market to them. These are like little sociological reports. And what they do is they explain the age ranges, how many people in these age ranges are alive, what they're, when they're, okay, so this one's a different page, but I'll just give an overview of it. It says generation, let's start with baby boomer, born between 44 and 64. There's actually a subgroup. There's a baby boomer one, baby boomer two, but they don't have that on this one. Then it has a coming of age year. That's not on this one, but they usually have that, like what year they came of age and what major event occurred in their lives to sort of shape their lives. And that makes sense because that informs how they would save, spend, buy, et cetera, et cetera. And the baby boomers one, which were the most optimistic generation, they were very nationalistic. They were very patriotic. They were very positive about the future and the outlook of it. They had more traditional background when it came to marriage and, you know, religion and that sort of stuff. Then baby boomer two, they had to break it into another category because their life event was something different. They said it was like a 20-year difference between them. So they were a little bit more skeptical. Their thing was Watergate and the Vietnam War. And because of that, there was sort of a schism where they didn't feel as optimistic about the future. And Kennedy assassination, I think, was on there. And basically, you know, what would happen if you see the president get assassinated, Martin Luther King get assassinated, Malcolm X gets killed, all these, you know, Black Panthers and just different, all these different people were getting assassinated back then. Both Kennedy brothers, like she says in the movie, both brothers, she doesn't believe, that movie, JFK, is almost like a conspiracy theorist's life story, where they try to tell the people nobody believes them, they have all this pressure, they have this pushback, and then finally there's another incident that occurs, and then the people start to acquiesce and believe them and say, oh, okay, see what you were saying was right. And then, you know, the guy fights and fights, but nothing ever happened. At the end, they said, yeah, maybe that wasn't the only shooter, but, you know, this whole thing being a conspiracy is just, you know, a bridge too far for me to cross. But he lays it out, you know, from a good point of view of the conspiracy theorist. But anyway, let me get back to these things. So it's Generation X, born between 65 and 79. Now that one, they always change. I've seen it all the way down to 77 or 78. So some of these sites have different dates between them. And I think those 2 years are actually important. Well, the Generation X and the Millennials, the difference between them is it says for Generation X, they were born between, well, I'll start with the boomers just to give you guys an idea. Baby boomers were born between 44 and 64, and they're currently between 55 and 75 years of age. Now, I think the average lifespan is around 71 to 75 years. So yeah, that's important. There are 76 million still alive in the U.S. Generation X, they were born between 1965 and 1979. And are currently between 40 and 55 years old, and there are 82 million of them in the U.S. Generation Y, or millennials, were born between 80 and 94, and they're currently between 25 and 39 years old. There are, and they're breaking them into a subcategory of Y1 and Y2. Y, 31 million in the U.S. for the Generation Y1. Generation Y2, they're from the age of 29 to 39, there's 42 million of them for everyone keeping count. Generation Z is the newest generation to be named. I always like to be Generation Z. And we're born between 95 and 2015. They're currently between 4 and 24 years old, nearly 74 million in the U.S. That sounds like an overrepresentation. There's 82 million, 76 million, 31 million, 42 million. Well, maybe that averages out right. So it says the term millennial has become a popular way to reference both segments of Gen Y and Y2. Realistically, the name Gen Z is a placeholder for the youngest people on the planet. It is likely to morph as they leave childhood and mature into their adolescent and adult identities. And that reminds me, my wife was getting a, I think there was the sonogram. They were doing the, you know, the jelly, and then they were listening. And I said, there's 6 billion people on the planet, and they all came here the same way. So this, you know, I don't think people should get that nervous, you know, if they're pregnant, because, you know, look at how many people there are on the planet, and all of them had to come through the same, you know, the same pathway, more or less. And the nurse who was doing the procedure nodded, and she was like, yeah, that's true. It says, why are generations named after letters? It started with Generation X, people born between 65 and 79. The preceding generation was the baby boomers. Post-World War II, Americans were enjoying newfound prosperity, which resulted in a baby boom. The children born as a result were dubbed the baby boomers. And that reminds me of this guy that I met that was basically retired, but he wanted to keep working. So he had a job as a guard and a guard gate. And I knew he was bored. So every time I'd drive through, I'd talk with him a little bit. And he was an old school sort of hippie socialist guy. And he used to tell me that I needed to find the real writings of Marx and Engels, and how the stuff they taught in schools about Marx and Engels was, like, you know, slanderous and just really didn't nail what they were going for precisely. And that I had to really find the right things of what they were going for. And he was, and this was interesting about this, because I met a bunch of other socialists. And basically what somebody had said was socialism was basically Christianity without the religious part. And that's what they were trying to do. And that's why people always say it's a good idea, but it's always executed improperly. And there's a lot of people who are Christians that associate themselves with socialism. They'll say they're Christian socialists, even though Lenin said a Christian socialist is an anti-socialist. But I get what they think. They have an idea of what it is, and it's not the same. Well, anyway, this guy had grown up, he was probably a boomer one, and he had grown up in the apple pie, you know, baseball era of, like, you know, you could go home without locking your doors, where you can still do in some places in the country, believe it or not. It's that big and that diverse that, you know, it's not as unsafe as they would lead you to believe that it is. And in some parts, it really is unsafe. But it's also safe in certain other parts, because I've been all up and down and all side to side. I've been all around this crazy country, and it is just a diverse landscape with a diverse group of people, and they are not caricatures. They're not cliches. Some of them can act like it sometimes or sound like it, but I think that we tend to pigeonhole people a little bit more than we should. But he said to me, he said, and he had a stutter, so whenever he'd get really intense, he would get excited and he'd start to stutter, and I'd be like, what do you want to say? And he'd go, and he couldn't get it out. So I'd just wait, and I'd calmly wait, and then he would say what he had to say. But he would get excited, and he would say, you know, you guys, I feel so bad for you, because you'll never have that feeling we did when we were growing up, that this place was so wonderful, and it was so safe, and it was so much fun. And, you know, people were into sports, and they were into wholesome activities, and, you know, nobody had all these crazy differences, and people weren't at each other's throats, or at least portrayed to be at each other's throats. And he said that everything was just better. And he said he couldn't explain how much better it was, but he was like, compared to now, because I was like, you know what, where we live right here is not so bad. And he said, yeah, but he said, you could ride your bike down the street. You could go. He kind of painted a picture of what it was like in Stephen King's, the one with the kids, the one with Will Wheaton and River Phoenix, that movie. What was that called? The Body? Stand By Me. So he kind of was saying it was like that, only you didn't have the crazy Kiefer Sutherland character that was chasing them. So he loved it, but he thought the solution, the way back, was through some sort of a socialist, I don't know, utopian model. And I don't know how you would implement that, but I think they're trying to, but not in the way that he wanted it to. But that's what that was his answer. And it's kind of weird that I met a bunch of people that actually agreed with him. I guess they were taught socialism was something different. So maybe that's why. Maybe they had a different idea than what I have. Maybe I'm wrong. So it says Generation X, people were born between 65 and 79. Now, I know for a fact that the year they changed this on different sites. I don't know why, but there might be something to why they changed the dates. It said the preceding generation were the boomers and post-World War II Americans. And they were enjoying, because remember, if you've ever seen the movie Rambo, the guy... The reason why he had such a problem with Rambo was not just because he was a drifter. He and what happened was that he said, you know, we came home and we really didn't get the kind of recognition. And they were kind of having a, you know, they were kind of having a rivalry. So this is similar to that. And that's, I think that's a theme in that movie that gets missed or not explored. In fact, that movie, the script was rewritten. I have a friend that knew Sylvester Stallone, and he said the first one was so bad that he tried to get out of it, and then he rewrote it, just like he rewrote Rocky. Originally, Rocky was real foul-mouthed and kind of a nastier character. But this says the children in born as a result were dubbed baby boomers after baby boom, which is sort of redundant, but I see. It says the generation that followed the boomers didn't have a blatant cultural identifier. And that sort of harkens back to that line in Fight Club where he says, we did not have a great war, our great war, or a great depression. He said, our great depression was our lives, and our great war is a spiritual one. In fact, that's the anecdotal origin of the term Gen X, illustrating the undetermined characteristics they would come to be known by. So why is X the label for an unknown quantity? Depending on whom you ask, it was either sociologists, a novelist, or Billy Idol who cemented this phrase in our vocabulary. I'm going to go with Billy Idol or the unknown novelist. From there on, it was all down alphabet. The generation followed Generation X naturally became Gen Y. I thought it was Generation RX because of all of the illicit drugs and the OxyContin. Born 1980 to 1994, give or take a few years on either end, the term millennial is widely credited to Neil Howe, along with William Strauss. The pair coined the term in 1989 when the impending turn of the millennium began to feature heavily in the cultural consciousness. Generation Z refers to babies born from the mid-2000s through today, although the term isn't yet widely used. This may signal the end of alphabet soup. It does coincide with the literal end of the alphabet, after all, which is why I said, how would you like to be Generation Z? I think after that comes the rapture. A flurry of potential labels has appeared, including Gen Tech, Post-Millennials, iGeneration, and Gen Wi-Fi. That's terrible. No. We're not going to use that one. Gen Tech, Post-Millennials, iGeneration, maybe the iGeneration. Splitting up Gen Y. Javelin Research noticed that not all millennials are currently in the same stage of life. While all millennials were born around the turn of the century, some of them are still in early adulthood. wrestling with new careers and settling down, while the older have a home and are building a family. It's funny they say that. I have a bunch of friends because I went to all the schools in the area, public, private, you know, Air Force, all kinds of different schools in the area. And I don't know that many people settling down with a family. In fact, it's very non-traditional. I think what's happening is that people are realizing the importance of the tradition since they've been gone for a while. But I, honest, in my own personal, anecdotal life, I have not seen so many people, you know, doing the traditional family thing. And it says, usually in these things, it's because a lot of people are saddled with on average, about $150,000 worth of debt, which is just unbelievable. That's slavery. It doesn't have to be chains of iron to be a slave. All you need is to be obligated. You can imagine how having a child might change your interest and priorities. So it sure does. So for marketing purposes, which is what this is always an upshot towards, it's useful to split this generation into Y1 and Y2. So in other words, F those boomers because, you know, they're in their 70s. So they're not going to be around that much longer. I mean, it shouldn't be like that. It should be that they should be around longer because nutrition and medicine and everything should have taken this great leap forward. So they should be living a lot longer, eh? Not only are the two groups culturally different, but they're in vastly different phases of their financial life. The younger group are financial fledglings, just flexing their buying power. The latter group has a credit history. They may have their first mortgage and are raising toddlers. The contrast in priorities and needs is vast. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. The friends that I have that are in the latter category, they are just scraping to get by. And the other ones, if they do have families, actually have big families. But the key to all that, the secret to all that of how you raise a family is you make amends with your family, your extended family, and you get them to help out. And that way there's a cohesion, there's a social cohesion and bond where you have that family unit back together. And then you get to know your neighbors, and then you have that social cohesive bond with your community. And then you don't need government so much. You can sort of put them in the back and you guys can get together as a group and as a neighbor and be neighborly and help each other to solve your own problems. So you don't need to get a handout or something along those lines. And I'm not actually putting down people who do. In this day and age, they kind of put you over a barrel to where, you know, you almost start out in the, you know, behind the eight ball. So you kind of have to, you need a pull up from the beginning. I understand the whole philosophy of pulling yourself up by the bootstraps and taking personal responsibility. And that's important. It is. But, you know, there's gray areas and there are extenuating circumstances for everybody. So, you know, it's not that cut and dry as people would make it seem. You know, everybody kind of has help from different people, and anybody who tries to do it completely alone, who I happen to know, I know somebody that has 5 children and they had to move and they were raising them. They were doing the YouTube thing. They were making documentaries. And this person basically, after he had run that course and done that, you know, doing the website, had to kind of put that stuff to the side for a little bit and make that a passive revenue stream if it was, you know, a revenue stream at all, and then go and get a jobby job, you know, be a jackass of the boss, as Eric John Phelps says. But you have to do what you have to do when you have 5 children. And, you know, I respect the guy for doing that. But, you know, even he had to bite the bullet and go do that. So that's an anecdote from that end. Then from the other end, I know a bunch of people who went out, went to college, got degrees, did not get jobs in the fields that they got strapped with some of the student loans, worked their way out from underneath them, either went back to school and did a trade, you know, and sort of regrouped. And now they kind of like have extra money, but they missed out on that window of having a family. So what you're starting to see is you're starting to see people getting people that are older having that decision to have children when they're in their late 30s. And what's happening is that obviously they're going to have less children. So it's kind of like a eugenics type of scenario. That would actually be dysgenics, I think. But, you know, it kind of is like that. And a lot of these people, when I talk to them, especially friends who I haven't spoken to in a long time, when I tell them that I had a family, I started a family, they're shocked. Not because I started the family, but because the idea had never crossed their mind. They had never even thought to do it. By the time they went through school and, you know, they were taught to believe that you go out and you find something you love to do and you do the thing you love. By the time they went out and tried to do that and then failed and, you know, ended up doing whatever they're doing now, they weren't antithetical to the idea of having a family. They just never actually thought about it or planned it out. And that's kind of scary because, you know, you have sort of a window of time of when you could do it. Well, not sort of, you absolutely do. And these people had never thought about that by the time they had sort of settled their debts and gotten on their feet. So now they have all this money. They have a dog or a pet or something that they call their baby. Or one girl had a Corvette and she called that her baby. And, you know, they're on in vitro fertilization. So there's your Brave New World type stuff. And, you know, Brigitte Nielsen, the woman from Flavor of Love, and Rocky IV, the wife of the big Russian guy who was not actually Russian. He was Swedish, I believe. And he's also I think he's a PhD mathematical theory or something. He's a real super smart guy. Well, anyway, the wife, Brigitte Nielsen, who was, I think she was dating Flavor Flav, she was starring this newest Rocky movie, the Creed movie, and she was pregnant 30 years later at the age of like 48 or 49. I don't know what I was more shocked to learn, that she was, no, she had to be older than that. Well, anyway, she was pregnant when they were making Creed 2. She's no spring chicken, is the point. And I'm pretty sure it was in vitro fertilization. And they also know what the in vitro fertilization, because I've asked the women that go to have it done. It's also very expensive. It's painful and it's expensive. They can create twins. They can actually, you know, do a designer baby type of a thing. Now, I don't think they actually do that on purpose, but, you know, you mess around with that sort of stuff, and what are you doing? You know, you're getting into sci-fi. You're edging into science fiction territory. And that's not even putting down people that, you know, go to make that decision. I'm very pro-family. All right, I'm going to read a little. I'm going to keep reading. Show's almost over. They consider the difference between someone in elementary school and high school. While they might be the same generation, they have very different views and needs. Marketing to young generations as a single cohort will not be nearly as effective as segmenting your strategy and messaging. Why are generation cohort names important? And I don't know if we can get to that this week. So maybe what I'll do is leave this one on a cliffhanger. Leave you guys on the edge of your seat. I'll say bye and then I'll talk it out. And if it keeps recording, then you'll have a little bonus segment. Oh, okay. This looks a little bit interesting. Baby boomers, 76 million banking habits. They prefer going in branch to do transactions, but don't reject digital or mobile. Fascinating. Post-World War II optimism shaping events, Vietnam War, and the launch of environmental movement. What's on their horizon? The answer, for those who stick around, is balancing children's success with retirement goals. Okay, good night, everyone. I'm going to keep talking for this a little bit longer just to see what happens, but that was pretty much the official ending. This is the part where I start singing. And I get tips. I feel like I'm a scam model because I have my webcam going. So, what would you guys like to hear? Not that I would know. But, I think I ended these the last time, so maybe that's what I'll do. Yeah, you know what? I might as well end it there instead of going into anything new. Because if I start a new topic and it doesn't get covered fully, then my OCD will kick in and I'll go crazy for the next week, leaving it unfinished like that. Debating on whether or not to read this Bible verse. Okay, I'm going to read it real fast. Okay, I couldn't find this earlier. I found it now. Genesis 49:8. And it says, it's in the context of Jacob blesses his sons. Then Jacob called for his sons and said, "Gather around so I can tell you what will happen to you in the days to come." And it says, "Assemble and listen, sons of Jacob. Listen to your father, Israel. Reuben, you're my firstborn, my might, despite the first sign of my strength, excelling in honor, excelling in power, turbulent as the waters. You will no longer excel, for you went up to your father's bed, onto my couch, and defiled it. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are weapons of violence. Let me not enter their council. Let me not join their assembly, for they have killed men in their anger and hamstrung oxen as they pleased. Cursed be their anger, so fierce, and their fury, so cruel. I will scatter them in Jacob and dispense them in Israel." And here's the verse I wanted to read. "Because of the Lion King, Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You are a lion's cub, Judah. You return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches and lies down. Like a lioness, who dares to rouse him? The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he to whom it belongs shall come, and the obedience of the nations shall be his." But that's a whole kettle of fish that, you know, we'll end it right there, because I don't know how much it's recording. And I don't want to get into that. I want to interpret it properly, because if you don't teach that stuff properly, bad things happen to you. You're supposed to really know what you're talking about. So I will leave that one right there, and I'll end this one. Oh man, I feel like there was something I didn't cover though. A quick one. I want to end with at least something that's a little funny maybe. Yeah. see any story that's quick enough that I could just skim it. All these were kind of downers. So, yeah, let me cut it there. And, tomorrow's another day. And maybe we'll do a show tomorrow. All right, I'm going to end it right there.